At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Welcome to the Healing Trauma Podcast, a compassionate guide for those seeking to heal and thrive. Introducing your host, Monique Coben, a certified trauma recovery coach and fellow traveler on the path to healing. In this podcast, we will engage in heartfelt conversation with experts in the field of trauma healing. We'll explore ways to cultivate feeling safe in our bodies and in connection to others, so that we can be present to live the life we've been given more fully and with more joy. Join us as we navigate the way towards a life restored. Introducing your host, Monique Coben.
Hi, and welcome to the Healing Trauma Podcast. My name is Dr. Mark McNair. I am excited to have with me Tim Fletcher. Tim, welcome to the Healing Trauma Podcast.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
So, Tim, if there's people out there listening that are not familiar with your work, maybe you could introduce yourself.
Sure. Yeah, so I, 40 years ago, became a pastor, and within 11 years had burnt myself out. And really, looking back, the reason was that because of my own complex trauma from childhood, I didn't know how to take care of myself properly. Thought that love was constantly giving and sacrificing, and that taking care of yourself was being lazy or selfish. So I had burnt myself out. And also there was some not good at boundaries stuff that was part of that. So I got diagnosed with chronic fatigue syndrome and fibromyalgia and clinical depression. So I went through 7 very, very dark years. Part of that was on disability. Part of that was just trying to get back on my feet. And so I worked on a lot of farms, which actually was quite therapeutic for me. But then one day a lady came to me at church, and she worked at an addiction treatment center. And she just said, Tim, we need a male counselor. And I think you might be the guy for the job. And I said, I don't think I am the guy for the job. And I just blew it off. And part of that was it just wasn't on my radar as something that was of interest. And I really didn't think I was healthy enough physically to be able to do that, to handle that again. She came back about 6 months later and she said, the job's still there. Would you at least come for the interview? Just be willing to check it out. So I said, okay, but no promises. So I went and liked what I heard. And I said, okay, here's the deal. I will try it for 3 months. I said, I really don't know if this is the right fit, if I can handle it health-wise, but I'll give it a 3-month commitment and then we'll assess. So they said, okay. So I started. And within the first week, I said, I think I found where I belong. This is what all of my life journey and past has been preparing me for. I found my home. I found my people. What I didn't realize at the time was the treatment center I was at was the only treatment center in Canada that saw addiction as a symptom of deeper issues. Their focus wasn't just on putting band-aids on symptoms and doing relapse prevention stuff. It was really, what's the root pain that you've been trying to solve with drugs and alcohol? What caused that not fitting in feeling, that deep emptiness that you felt that you've been trying to solve with drugs and alcohol? And so they really, complex trauma wasn't even a term back then. It wasn't even in the vocabulary, but they were already kind of exploring, this is coming out of childhood. This is stuff that happened that affected the child in such a way that they had this unresolved pain and this unresolved emptiness and this unresolved shame that I'm not good enough, I don't belong, that they've been trying to solve with drugs and alcohol. So once Dr. Gaber Mate's book came out in the realm of Hungry Ghosts, I read that and he said, 100% of the people that he worked with who struggle with addiction have childhood trauma. That just set me, that makes sense out of all that I've been working on and researching and figuring out on my own. That sent me down kind of, what is this trauma? And it wasn't just kind of one event trauma. It was that ongoing sense of danger, complex trauma that a child has from not just abuse, but also neglect. And that just opened up this whole new world, defined all of this stuff that I had been working on. So the bottom line is I never intended to get into this field. It was kind of through a whole bunch of events, my own trauma and my own going through burnout, hitting a very, very dark place, and then trying to come out of that. This was put on my plate. I didn't even want it, but I ended up trying it, fell in love with it, and then it opened up this whole new field of complex trauma, which I've had the privilege of being part of kind of developing and exploring. There's been lots of academic learning, but it's a big part been just my journey of figuring stuff out as I go.
Curious, you talk about, you know, some of the symptoms you had and the burnout. Was there any realization that there was trauma in your life at that point?
Yeah. So at that point, it was either this is because I'm working too hard, or this is because I've got some disease that they just need to find a cure for. Had zero concept that this comes from deep childhood issues that I wasn't even aware of. Much of it came out of kind of the religious upbringing that I had and kind of how they viewed service, love, work, and all of that. So there was a whole teaching training element of my childhood that indoctrinated me a certain way that set me up for this. And then once you're in that environment, you're actually creating your own complex trauma environment. Because you're go, 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 go in your sympathetic nervous system constantly. If you go to your parasympathetic to relax, you feel guilty, you feel you're not loving enough, you feel you're not being what you should be. And so you just keep yourself in this very, well, ends up being a very unsafe environment based on all of the teaching that you had. So I had zero concept that I came from complex trauma and was creating complex trauma for myself.
Yeah.
I just thought I had some sickness or I had worked too hard.
Or something was wrong with you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So I think you alluded to it, but I just want to go back to it. That idea of trauma or PTSD versus complex trauma. Could you expand on that?
Yeah. So PTSD basically comes out of, the terms are simple trauma and complex trauma, and they come from math. So you got simple numbers and complex numbers is basically what he is. Simple trauma is one-time events. So a horrific event that's out of the normal, a car accident, a rape, war, whatever. That's very significant. So we call that big T trauma. Complex trauma, it can have a whole bunch of one-time big events that are horrific, but it also is much broader than that. It's when a child doesn't feel safe. So complex is ongoing. And so what causes a child to feel safe? So this now gets into little T trauma, which is more neglect. So big T trauma is that one-time event is something horrific, bad happening to you. Little T trauma is something good that should have happened to you, didn't. It's the trauma of absence, that something should have happened but didn't. So it's almost like it's invisible trauma. So your need for acceptance should have been met, but it wasn't. You were always judged and criticized. Your need for connection should have been met, but it wasn't because everybody was too busy or angry. Your need to be authentic should have been met, but it wasn't because you were judged for that. So you always had to be somebody else to try to fit in. The child doesn't feel safe in that environment because they can't be themselves. They're not connecting with anybody. They feel alone. They feel judged. They feel not good enough. That's trauma. And that's subtle, but it's powerful. What to me has been significant in understanding CPTSD is it's the ongoing, mainly very subtle forms of neglect that most people don't see as trauma. But they affect the brain the same way as trauma. And so we know that over 80% of people have that little T complex trauma that comes out of something in their home wasn't healthy enough to meet certain emotional needs consistently. So they lived with this pain of not having the need met. Then they couldn't get it resolved because nobody was helping them or meeting that need. So they felt unsafe. They felt not seen, not heard. They felt not good enough. It must be my fault. And that is where trauma very subtly comes in, but it's rampant. It's big. What the child then does is, if it's my fault, I must adapt. So I need to be somebody different than who I really am. I can't be authentic. So I will wear masks. I will try to be a hero child, a funny child, whatever, in order to get my needs met, in order to be liked, in order not to be judged. So they're adapting. And it seems to be helping. But then 30 years later, they're realizing me not trusting anybody, me lying, me wearing masks, not being authentic. Well, those are the bedrock foundations of a healthy relationship. So I basically adapted to survive, but I learned tools that prevented healthy relationships. So now all my adult relationships are not working. And I wonder why. Well, it's from 30 years earlier. It's from 40 years earlier that your adaptations really were maladaptations. And that's the subtlety of CPTSDs. Often you don't see the results till 30 years later.
I find that a lot of people get, you know, just a handful of diagnoses. I did, at least. I had this handful of ADHD, depression, generalized anxiety, on and on and on, and just medicate. It just doesn't work.
Exactly.
You talk about, and I love this, that I've heard you talk about the need for love and affirmation in childhood.
There's all kinds of different ways to understand complex trauma or CPTSD. There's the lack of connection. So a child's trying to connect, they can't. It's the child can't be authentic. And so all of those things that have a traumatic response. But what we teach our clients is that we have 12 kind of basic needs. So physical needs, emotional needs, intellectual needs, relational needs, spiritual needs. It's the emotional needs that are the key needs that usually aren't met that cause complex trauma. So that's connection, authenticity. One of them is validation, that a child needs to be told you have value just the way you are. You're good at this. This is your personality. We accept you. All of those are so critical for a child. Those meeting of needs, when a child gets their needs met, they feel love. They feel I matter. I'm good enough. I feel complete. I feel whole. Love isn't just an emotion. Love is the experience of having my needs consistently met by somebody else. What happens in complex trauma is those needs aren't being met. The child is adapting to try to get those needs met. But what the child is beginning to believe is you have to earn love. Love is conditional. You only get love if you do certain things. So they don't understand unconditional love because they've never experienced it. And that becomes a huge learning thing in recovery for people, is they don't trust love because it's always had strings attached. There's always been hidden agendas. And so to actually experience unconditional love feels wrong. Weird. It makes them suspicious. It creates fear. It adds stress because they're expecting something bad's going to happen here. There's going to be an expectation of me, but it's such an important part of the healing journey. But typically what happens when a child doesn't experience love and they begin to feel that all love is conditional, you got to earn it. And that if people express love to them, like I love you, or they do things for them, there's always a hidden agenda. There's always strings attached. What they do is then develop a kind of a protection system around themselves that is suspicious of love. It's almost like they become waterproof to love. So if you express love to me, it's like water off a duck's back. What's your agenda? What are you after? Or you're just saying that to be nice or because you don't know me. But they have all these built-in defense systems to automatically negate love, true love, because their past experience with unsafe people is that love as expressed to you can never be trusted as truly love. So validation and love to me become such a healing part of trauma recovery. But if I can take it farther, Mark, and it would be this. So a child needs love and validation from others. And as they receive that consistently, they learn to give it to themselves. They learn to accept themselves, love themselves for who they are, forgive themselves in failure, validate themselves without getting a big head, all of those very important things they learn to do for themselves. But when they don't get it from others, they don't think they deserve it, so they don't give it to themselves. Now, instead of loving themselves, they kind of despise themselves and want to hide themselves, and they reject themselves. Instead of validating themselves, they criticize themselves. They put themselves down. And so part of the healing journey is you can't just expect others to give you the love and validation. You have to learn to give it to yourself as well. And you got to shut that internal critic up, replace it with compassion, empathy, and seeing yourself in a more positive way. That often is a more difficult part of the healing journey for some, because to change all that internal dynamic is huge. But to me, I don't see people get very far in recovery unless they learn to silence that internal critic, replace it with love, empathy, curiosity, compassion, and learn to love and be kind to themselves. That is such an essential piece in beginning and maintaining this journey.
Yeah, I just want to add in there, it takes time. It takes a lot of time. It's not one and done, or it's not, you know, you go so far and then, okay, I've arrived. It's an ongoing process, not a procedure.
Exactly. And that's, to me, one of the biggest challenges for people in recovery at the beginning is often we just think in terms of the physical medical healing model. Like you got a broken thumb, you go, you get an x-ray, you get a cast, 6 weeks, you're basically fixed. We just think we got an emotional wound. We go in, get diagnosed, 6 weeks, we're basically fixed if we follow these simple three steps. And it's like, no, the trauma healing model is 2 to 10 years. It's up and down. It's super slow. It's super messy because you're working with your subconscious brain, trying to make it conscious, trying to be aware of all the programs that are happening automatically without you even realizing it, that are getting triggered without you even realizing it, that are sending you back to old tools without you even realizing it. This is a slow, messy process. So be patient with yourself.
So Tim, I wanted to ask, you've worked with so many people. What have they taught you about trauma?
What's fascinating to me is I didn't learn about trauma initially from books. I've read hundreds of books now, and I still read books every week. But all of my initial understanding of trauma was working with clients before the word trauma was even developed. I just knew there's something in their childhood stuff that was really causing them to have so much pain that drugs became the solution to their problem. So every workshop that I would teach in the early days, I would finish that workshop because they were very interactive. It wasn't just me talking. I would teach, they would ask questions, I would ask them questions. I would go and write pages of notes because I had learned so much just from stories somebody shared, a question somebody asked. And it would just kind of make click, 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 click in my brain. All these little dots would get connected. Yeah. And I go, oh, yeah. Okay, I got to add that to the next workshop. I got to add that. That just fills up my thinking. And so it was this growing by nuance of understanding as I interacted, counseled, taught with clients that my understanding just built and built. When I started, I came across Janet Wojtyk's book on adult children of alcoholics, and she had the 13 characteristics of adult children of alcoholics. I started teaching that. Clients loved it. I started seeing other characteristics. So I built it up to 25 characteristics. And then I kept getting more. Then I built it up to 50 characteristics. Now we're at 87 characteristics. As I worked with clients, I began to see patterns in behavior, patterns in thinking, characteristics in how they responded emotionally to stuff. I began to build my understanding more and more. So most of my understanding was built on the foundation of experience of my own life and working with clients. The book learning, all that came later and really confirmed, validated, gave clarifying language that just helped me further.
Rose is your name, but when you poop, it sure don't smell like roses. You're number two, burns the hair in my nose. But we fought hand in paw. Now your poop don't stink at all. Now that the air is clear,
I'll treasure your front and rear, my sweet rose.
Instantly neutralize poop stink with Poop Fighter from World's Best Cat Litter for the world's best cat.
One of the things I've heard you talk about a lot is the need for safe people in recovery. And I just want to preface that statement with how hard it is for people who have not had safe people in their lives to even consider the idea of getting around people, being around people, trusting people. Yeah. I'm going to hand that to you now.
Yeah. Probably the question I get asked the most when I do question answer sessions is, where do I find safe people? That is a reality, a challenge that everybody in recovery has to face. And what I want people really to reframe it in their mind is, there are safe people out there. They're not going to show up at your doorstep and introduce themselves. You got to keep trying, keep looking. And if you're desperate enough to heal, you may go through 50 people before you find a safe person, but you're determined enough to keep trying until you find safe people. So it's really, I think so often in our Western culture, we've outsourced our recovery to the professionals, and we don't realize how hard we have to work ourselves to make recovery happen. And in trauma recovery, you can't just outsource it and have everybody else fix you. You got to keep trying and trying and trying, and it just takes tons and tons of hard work. So you got to build that agency and determination and commitment to just keep working away, even though it's frustrating and not working out as smoothly as you hoped. That becomes an important ingredient in this. But to me, then there's a whole bunch of other issues around the safe people that need to be understood, and I'll just quickly kind of highlight them. If you've tried to connect since you were little to mom and dad, but you haven't developed a secure attachment with anybody, you don't know how to have secure attachment. You don't have the tools for secure attachment. Secure attachment actually scares you, because what happened when you tried to securely attach to mom and dad is you got criticized and hurt. A secure attachment in your mind means pain. It means getting hurt. It means rejection. So there's a huge fear around secure attachment. So you got to learn the tools of secure attachment, which takes time. Then you got to realize that to start attaching to somebody is actually going to create more fear for a while. It's going to feel weird. That leads to the next piece, which is all of your relationship templates have been with emotionally unavailable people. That feels normal to you. That feels comfortable to you. You know how to live there. Now, when you actually are with somebody who's emotionally available, that feels scary. That feels wrong. That doesn't match your childhood templates of what relationships are like. So it adds more stress to you to be with somebody who's emotionally available. And so what I want people to realize is that transition time is 3 to 6 months, where you're going from your unhealthy relationship templates that felt normal to a healthy relationship. It adds more stress and more fear for 3 to 6 months until it becomes your new normal. You just got to get through that. You got to be willing to give it a chance. But then you got the next thing, which is every time a child got its hopes up to connect to mom and dad, they got dashed. So now you just gave up hoping. And now whenever hope starts to grow in your chest, it scares you and you want to sabotage it. Because I don't want to get my hopes up too much, because I'm going to get hurt again. That's what's always happened. That's been my history. It's realizing that this getting my hopes up again is actually a very scary event for people. And I just as soon self-sabotage than to give this a chance. So you got a whole bunch of factors that all are coming into play now that make this a very difficult thing. Another piece for many people is, growing up in complex trauma, the child's needs weren't being met. So they basically felt inferior, not good enough. And so they just adapted. It's my responsibility to be something else to make this relationship work. I can't set boundaries. I can't express my needs. I can't see myself as an equal and put myself out there. I have to make myself smaller. I have to deny my needs. So when they meet somebody, instead of going, this is what I need, this is who I am, and putting themselves out there, they go to small which attracts unsafe people. And so for them to get to safe people, they have to be willing to fight their own shame and programming and come right in and say, here are my needs. Here's what I need. Set boundaries right away. That's going to scare the unsafe people away because they can't now manipulate you or groom you or love bomb you because you have a confidence in what you need and require as far as respect. There's a certain amount of healing of your own shame that has to happen before a person can actually change the dynamic of how a relationship should operate.
That's so good. Appreciate that. Another question for you. Why are emotions so hard for people with complex PTSD?
Yeah, such a good question. When you look at a child whose needs aren't being met or who is being abused, they're experiencing pain as a result of that. They can't resolve that pain. They tell mom and mom and dad just judge them and punish them more. So pain just leads to more pain. They can't resolve the pain. They can't talk to anybody. They don't have the tool. All they've got is this growing pain inside of them. The second piece to me with that is when you look at the chemicals of connection, they're the same chemicals as joy. And so when a child truly connects with a safe person, they experience dopamine, serotonin, oxytocin. Those are I feel loved, I feel safe, I feel secure. All of those are positive chemicals. But if a child can't connect, they're not getting those positive chemicals. They're getting cortisol. So their emotional world is not mainly positive. Their emotional world is mainly negative. So yeah. They've got a negative, empty emotional world, and then pain that they can't resolve. Well, the brain goes, well, what do I do? I can't resolve this pain. Well, let's just shut it down, dissociate from it. Let's disconnect from it, or let's medicate it. So they go to freeze or medicate as the only way to try to fix these unresolvable emotions. And part of that is I see emotions as bad. They make me weak. They make me vulnerable. Who needs emotions? I'm just going to escape to my head and become a walking brain. I'll be super analytical and logical. That's all I need to be. Who needs emotions? What they don't realize is they've only experienced negative emotions they couldn't resolve. Emotions were designed to be wonderful guides. They're designed to enrich life, to fill out and make life full. They're designed to be kind of an alarm system telling me what's going on in my world. But to a child in complex trauma, the emotions were trying to do that. The child was trying to follow all of that, but they couldn't fix it. And so who needs it? Get rid of it. So most people from complex trauma basically suppress emotions. Let's stuff them. I can't fix them. I can't resolve them. Let's stay busy. Let's stay distracted so I don't have to feel them. Let's medicate them somehow. And then let's see them as bad, as something that makes me weak. What then happens is they get into adult life because in childhood that kept them safe, that let them survive.
Sure.
But they get to adult life and all of a sudden their spouse is, you have no emotions, can't connect with you. And all of a sudden they realize this solution is no longer working. It's causing my relationships to be very unsatisfying. Children can't connect with me. I don't like my children's emotions. They make me uncomfortable and that's hurting my children. All of a sudden they realize, wow, there's a whole element of my life where basically I became a robot and thought that was strength. But it's made me less human. And because I'm less human now, it's hurting my relationships. I need to somehow get this emotional thing figured out. I would say to clients, this is going to be one of the most difficult, longest processes for you because you're learning a new language. You're learning a whole area that you have repressed and shut down for years. This is going to be a very slow, gradual learning journey, and you got to be really patient with it.
I often tell clients, I use this in my book, I use the phrase, the past is not the past when it shows up in the present. So often we are here today and we become very dysregulated, hyper-aroused because of what has happened back here. So as people become aware of that, I think sometimes they become more dysregulated to begin with. I'm curious, what are some tools? You know, I always talk about building a toolbox, but what are some tools you could recommend for listeners that can be helpful when you are too low, too high, not just right?
Yeah. So before I get to that, just let me comment on your, the past is not the past when it shows up in the present. And it's really realizing that many people from complex trauma go through an experience in the present and their response is over the top. Their response that they give isn't warranted by the situation that just happened. Right. And so we call that something was triggered from your past. So you're not just reacting to what's happening in the present, you're also reacting to something that is unresolved from your past. So what I want to do in helping people understand that is, our brain processes from the bottom up. So everything that happens to us first goes through our brain stem, then it goes through our limbic brain, then finally it goes to the cortex, the thinking part of the brain. So if you're walking down the street and you hear a car backfire, it first goes through the brain stem, and the brain stem compares that sound to anything in its memory that's similar to that sound. So if you're a war veteran and that car backfiring sounds like a gunshot, then the brainstem is going into survival mode. It hasn't got to the thinking part of your brain yet. It is going ducking and rolling on the sidewalk before you've even become aware of what's going on, because your subconscious brain has processed it already. Then after that, it goes to the limbic brain, the child brain, and it compares it to all its memories of that sound. Both of those go through safe. Then it goes to the cortex, to the thinking part of the brain, and it is able to process it in the here and now. So what happens when you get triggered from something in your childhood? You might be having a discussion with your wife, but all of a sudden you're yelling, you're throwing things, you're over the top, and they're freaked out going, what is going on with you? And you're saying, well, it's because you're doing this. No, your brainstem is connected and reacting to something it remembers from a long time ago that you haven't dealt with yet. Bottom up is how we process. Most Western techniques for helping people regulate their emotions are actually top down. We start with the cortex and we say, learn this information, talk to yourself this way, and that's going to work as long as the trigger doesn't get too intense, as long as it doesn't send you to ducking and rolling on the pavement. The top-down approach works. You can control a certain amount of anger, irritation responses by counting to 10, by talking to yourself, by a top-down approach. But if it gets too intense, top-down no longer works. You got to use bottom-up. That is, you got to calm, regulate the brainstem, regulate the limbic brain. You can't think your way out of those emotions.
I love that. That's such a good point.
And that's somatic therapies. So that's where people use yoga, tapping, breathing, going for a walk, pet therapy, art therapy, music. When you look at a baby that's dysregulated, what does it need to regulate it? It needs to connect to a regulated person. So we need to do that. It needs a rhythm, mom to rock it, mom to pat it on the back. The reason is because that reminds the baby of being in the womb where they only heard the mom's heartbeat, 60 to 80 beats a minute. That regulated, calmed, that's their safe place. So that's why rhythm has such a powerful effect. And then the baby, once it's calming down, it takes a deep breath and shudders and it kind of relaxes, and it's getting out of its sympathetic back to its parasympathetic nervous system. So we know if you look at a baby breathing, its stomach goes up and down, its chest doesn't move, its diaphragm. But when somebody's in fear, their breathing gets shorter and their chest starts going up and down. And so most people from complex trauma haven't learned how to breathe properly. And so learning to breathe properly again has a regulating effect. To use rhythm in walking and tapping in music has a calming effect. All of those things become super, super bottom-up somatic therapies that begin to help a person regulate. Other things that are being found is just like cold water therapy, sticking your face in cold water, splashing cold water, jumping in cold water. It get you out of that sympathetic into your parasympathetic, earthing, walking in bare feet, stimulates parts of your polyvagal nerve that helps you calm down. So to me, there's somatic things, but the baby primarily needs a connection with a safe person who they can co-regulate to. And that's where we need that safe person that we can co-regulate to when we get dysregulated. It's so important.
I want to ask you, what is your passion currently and what gets you up in the morning?
It's still what I do. I think it's when a person goes from kind of a job to finding their vocation, what job matches with my deepest passion. So in that first week when I found, like I'd always, and thankfully my mom and dad both allowed me to connect, my mom especially, at a deep level where I could ask deep questions, I could explore stuff. So I became kind of a deep thinker at a young age and was always in that world, that was my comfort zone. So when I would go out into social settings and groups of people and they just wanted to talk about football and the weather and the latest, it was just like boring, like this does nothing for me. I found it very frustrating. When I went that first week in the treatment program and found people that were talking at this deep level of pain, trying to understand, being authentic, I went, that's life. That's the way we're designed to operate. And I can't find this kind of connection anywhere else. It's when people are coming out of pain and there's an openness and a vulnerability and an authenticity that begins to happen in a safe environment, that is where life begins to happen. That's where change happens. That's where healing happens. And that's where leads to joy. That leads to connection. You can't just stay connecting only around trauma. You got to broaden that to have deeper and deeper, broader types of connection. That was a starting point. And so to me, I've worked with so many organizations that have all the information and they're great at presenting information, but they don't have the safe connection points for people where people can really do the healing. When I connected with my coach and facilitators, then something shifted inside of me that I'd never saw coming, and it's been life-changing.
So as people listen to this and they want to learn more about you, where can they go?
So our website, timfletcher.ca, is where you can go. We have a YouTube channel, Tim Fletcher, that you can watch 400 or 500 videos on complex trauma that are available to people.
This has been wonderful. I really appreciate getting together with you and look forward to having this out for people to listen to.
Thank you, Mark. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Joe.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Lowe's knows that free makes everything better. That's why our rewards members get free standard shipping on the things they need and want, starting at Silver Key status every day. Savings for rewards members add up fast, so why wait? Join for free today. Lowe's, we help, you save. Not available in Alaska and Hawaii. Exclusions and more terms apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/shipping terms. Subject to change.